Hi, I'm Joe Keenan, Senior Editor of Retail Online Integration. Welcome to today's webinar, 5 Best Practices for Replatforming E-Commerce Sites. Replatforming can be a daunting challenge, but for most e-commerce companies, it's simply a fact of life. Whether you're replatforming so you can gain additional pieces of functionality or because you're struggling to scale, with some advanced planning, you can often get more than you bargained for. You could solve these near-term tactical issues while also setting your site up for better overall performance and conversion. Joining me today to talk about this further is Ernie Schell, Director and Founder of Marketing Systems Analysis. Ernie brings a wealth of experience, including working with over 200 cross-channel merchants since 1985. His work has included selecting and implementing integrated order management, e-commerce, and fulfillment applications. Companies that he's worked with include Land's End, Lanax Collections, Body Central, National Business Furniture, Dutch Gardens, and Taylor Gifts. Over the last several years, Ernie has worked extensively with dozens of e-commerce companies. In today's webinar, he'll outline 5 best practices for replatforming that he's gleaned during this time. After that, we'll hear from Joe Circioni, Director of Fulfillment Operations of Guideposts, a nonprofit which sells inspirational magazines and best-selling books. Joe will give us an overview of Guideposts' recent replatforming project. We hope that attendees of this webinar leave with actionable insights into how to best plan for and execute a replatforming project that does more than address your immediate needs, but maintains your inbound traffic, increases your conversions, and advances your web strategy. But before we get started, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all of the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Speaking of bells and whistles, please click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn what all of the widgets on this console do and how you can customize your experience today. You can even tweet right from this console. With that, I'd like to pass things to Ernie Schell to kick us off.
Thank you very much, Joe. I'm very happy to be here with you and Joe Circioni today, and I want to thank everybody for joining us to talk about a very important subject, replatforming for e-commerce sites, 5 best practices. And I'd like to start off by reviewing what the 5 best practices are, in my opinion. They are: be strategic, define your goals, carefully plan the time frame, carefully plan the ecoverse, which we will talk about momentarily, and test, probably the most important of all. There really aren't any big secrets to any of these best practices, but it's amazing how often I've seen them really overlooked or honored in the breach. So let's dive right in and start with the first one, being strategic. The biggest strategic position I think one needs to take is to be all-inclusive within the organization, to understand that even though you just may be replatforming your e-commerce site, that this really does touch all departments. Everyone from merchandising to finance to operations really is somehow or other involved in what's going to happen with your e-commerce platform. Their voices need to be heard. You need to get input from them. You need to have truly collegial exchanges. And rather than wait until the end of the slide, I'd like to give you an example of what can happen when you do get together and share your positions, share your needs and requirements. Not too long ago, I worked with a company that was hot to trot in the replatforming program. They had set a budget. They'd actually already established a time frame for it. And I met with them to discuss needs and requirements in detail. And it just so happened that it was the first time that the entire organization had actually sat down around a table at once. Not everybody in the company, obviously, but the heads of departments, all the departments in the organization. And as they began talking and answering the questions that I posed to them, I saw eyebrows being raised and a lot of kind of shock and astonishment. People started saying, well, I didn't know that, and you know, why hadn't anybody ever told me this before? And it turned out that by lunchtime, we had determined that 95% of what the group that was planning for the replatforming wanted in their new system was already available in their existing platform. And it was a total shock to everybody there. They had no idea that there were things that were hidden in the platform, and some not so hidden. And they just had never really shared all of this before. Everybody assumed that everybody else knew everything they knew or didn't know what they didn't know. And even though it sounds, even in my describing it, so obvious, it's amazing how infrequently this kind of thing happens. So be all-inclusive. Also consider all your options. These include in-house development, even if you have a fairly small IT department. This is something you might consider doing in-house. A common caution, though, is that if this is the first project for everybody on a development team to do something like this, it's probably going to fail. So don't have this be the first run for a team down this road. But if your IT department has worked on e-commerce platforms before, you have a few people with a lot of experience, that's certainly a viable option. You may want to custom develop a platform and outsource that development to specialists who do this for a living. That can be expensive, but it can also give you the very best outcome in the long run. And, of course, there's third-party solutions that range from a third-party off-the-shelf package to outsourcing to a third party. And there are options within options. Magento, for example, is an open source solution that some third parties use. And if you have a third party manager who uses an open source solution, you may end up with the best of all possible worlds. So you may at some point down the road decide to take over the management of that, and that would make that all the easier to do. And then finally, you're not going to have everybody sitting around a table from all departments throughout the entire process of replatforming. So appoint a change team. Again, a very simple sounding, obvious seeming thing to do, and yet it's often overlooked. It's the change process is put into the hands of somebody who's volunteered or the company volunteered for them to take charge of the change process. And when it's all on one person's shoulders, not only is that a burden to somebody who's already got a full-time job, but can lead to a degradation of project integrity. So have a team that represents the major departments, and people can interact with their departments before and after change meetings and represent those departments when the team meets. How often they need to meet is entirely up to each company, usually once a week or once every other week for 45 minutes to an hour is sufficient. The second key best practice is to define your goals as clearly as you possibly can. You probably will start off with two or three pinch points that are leading to you to consider replatforming. As you begin to broaden out your discussions, you'll come up with probably an overload of reasons why you want to replatform. Try to narrow these down to the top five. That's a good sort of usable number. Three may be too few. More than five is probably too many to keep in your sights as you move forward with the project. Make sure, again, all multiple departments contribute to the list, and this is just a summary of the major departments. Don't forget finance, by the way. As a matter of fact, I'll give you a couple of examples as we go along where finance gets left out of the picture and to everyone's regret as the project gets to a conclusion. And then review your platform and site management options, both for their initial and recurring costs, for the flexibility that these options provide you, and for the reliability. And there are certainly trade-offs among those three issues, and I don't have to belabor that point, but I think it needs to be said because it needs to be addressed. And it will be certainly on the flexibility and reliability side, something you'll be grappling with as you move forward, particularly if your e-commerce platform involves some customization and modification. With enough flexibility, you can do a good deal of that, but you may start to have a negative impact on the reliability of the platform the further you go down that road. So these are issues that need to be discussed. Any one individual can probably come up with what they're comfortable with, but the team itself needs to be comfortable with those choices as well. Carefully plan the time frame. Time is such a huge issue in this whole process. It's not only as important as the budget, but actually I think in the long run more important than the budget. I often say that in the beginning, before you've selected what platform to go to, you're going to be probably overly focused on what the budget is. Once you've made that decision, you begin to forget what you've budgeted for it and begin to become obsessed with the time frame. And at the very end, you know the old cliche, when somebody's on their deathbed, they usually don't say, gee, I wish I spent more time at the office. It's, I wish I spent more time with my family, et cetera, et cetera. And the same thing is sort of true with these replatforming projects. When you get near the end or when you're done and you look back on it, you're not going to say, gee, I wish I spent more, I wish I spent less. You're going to say, gee, I wish I had more time, I wish I had budgeted more time, I wish we had given this more time, or I wish we had had more time just to do it. So it's going to be a huge issue for you. And look at your operations calendar when you're doing this to be sure that you're planning for heavy-duty development points where you can devote attention to them, as well as, of course, the targeted periods which are optimum for converting over to the new platform. And if you only have a month in your calendar, which many companies often do on an annual basis, where you really have the time to do this, just be very, very, very careful that when you plan that month for conversion to go live on the new platform, you realize that those 11 months prior or 9 months prior or 6 months prior, whatever the case might be, when you're supposed to be configuring the system and testing it and everything else, if you're so completely jammed up that you don't have enough time to devote for it, you're not going to be able to get everything done in a month. So try to be realistic about the time that you can devote to this. And as far as realism is concerned, the whole project window for conversion, once you've selected a platform, is typically 6 to 12 months. It can be done in a rush job, 3 months or even less. And it can take 18 to 24 months and sometimes longer, although I caution you not to take too long. Anything more than about 18 months, your goals will have changed, your business rules may have changed, you will be solving yesterday's problems, and you'll want to probably consider replatforming again as soon as you're ramped up onto the new one. So keep it within that 6 to 12-month sweet spot, and you probably will have a successful project if you do everything else right. Carefully planning the Ecoverse means that in most cases, the e-commerce platform by itself usually is not sufficient. It's necessary but not sufficient. There will be a lot of other modules that you're going to be looking at and considering and testing and making decisions about whether they need to enhance what the platform offers or add on to what the platform offers. Everything from search engine optimization and site search, which is completely different and perhaps even more important once they've found you, are they going to find the product they're looking for, through product reviews, affinity marketing, wish lists, fraud detection, live chat, email management, retargeting, and so on. These all are available in third-party modules that will be integrated to either through web services or some other, maybe a much more tightly bound integration with the e-commerce platform. And one of the advantages, by the way, of using modules is that as technologies change, the technology of your basic platform may be viable for 3 to 5 years, maybe even longer. But the technology on these very specific point-type applications in the module environment change rather quickly. And what if you want to remain competitive, it's often an advantage to have these additional modules. They do complicate the project, but if you plan for this in advance, it's also something you'll use in selecting the platform or the resource, third-party resource you use to bring this project to fruition. And finally, test. I think if I had to give you an example of the most overlooked issue within the five best practices, it's the testing one that gets most overlooked. For example, all of your points of integration, which I'll get to in a second, need to be looked at very, very carefully, including integration with flat files on the reporting side to the accounting department. There are a number of instances where I know of companies that really didn't pay much attention to this. They figured, well, how hard is it to integrate to a flat file? And it turned out to be a killer when the wrong fields were designated to be mapped to the accounting for or the reporting for accounting, the financial side of the business. And it took over a year to really untangle that mess in a reasonably large organization that I'm familiar with. So it really does make a big difference to test thoroughly everything. It's going to take 3 to 6 weeks minimum. It can sometimes take 8 to 10 weeks to test everything thoroughly. And you really need to go through every function, every feature in the system, test every point of integration, as I said, look at data integrity in your reporting. Some tests can be automated, but many of them will have to be done manually. And I always recommend building in some deliberate mistakes to test your error handling, because probably the worst-case scenario is everything you want it to do, it does, the system, the new platform. But it also lets you do anything else you care to do. And trust me, between your customers online and customer service, who may be using the same interface, some crazy things will be attempted. And you want the system to catch those, trap those errors, pop up some type of prompt about how to back out of the error, correct the error, something that's usable and readable to both your own employees and associates as well as to your customers, so that you can avoid getting a lot of junk data or garbage in your system or just completely unusable data that jams up the works entirely. And then finally, do a final test once you're live, probably late on a Saturday night or early on a Sunday morning, or very late on a Sunday night, extremely early on a Monday morning wouldn't be a good time to do that. But testing on the live site is important because you're probably going to have a test site where you do all of your testing, and it's not unknown that test sites operate and function just a little bit differently from live sites do. So you really want to avoid getting caught with that type of a situation. And with that, I will turn the floor over to, or the microphone over to, Joe Cirincione of Guidepost.
Thanks a lot, Ernie. Joe, I don't know if you want to do an intro here.
Yeah, I'm just going to jump in real quick. Just to recap, and thanks for that great overview, Ernie. Just wanted to recap Ernie's five best practices. One, perfect your approach. Two, define your goals. Three, carefully plan the time frame. Four, carefully plan the ecoverse. And five, test, and test again. I particularly like the idea of a change team that comprises members from the key functional areas of a company. With that, I'll turn things over to Joe Cirincione of Guidepost.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Hi, everybody. I'm Director of Operations here at Guidepost. And we actually today outsource to a third party, and I serve as the liaison to ensure the execution of outputs for our magazines and products. And I work with the outsourced account team on web operations. But before I get into more of that, let me tell you a little bit about Guidepost. We're a nonprofit organization. We sell inspirational magazines, best-selling books, cards, music, and other products that serve to uplift, encourage, and inspire. We publish and freely distribute inspirational publications, including Guidepost Magazine, books, booklets to hospitals, nursing homes, shelters, and prisons to reach people in need. And in addition to our freely distributed items, we have an e-commerce site through which we sell our books, greeting cards, music, and videos. And the site's really critical to the future of our company. Historically at Guidepost, we managed and hosted our e-commerce platform and did all of our fulfillment in-house. And several years ago, Guidepost began looking for a fulfillment vendor for our core business because we realized that the expense of doing in-house processing and fulfillment was really becoming cost prohibitive. And in our search, we came across a vendor who had, you know, decades of experience and was used by many other publishers. And they also had an e-commerce system equal to our own. And because the e-commerce site was directly linked to the product system, a decision was made to outsource this portion of our business to CDS Global, based in Des Moines, Iowa. And I was part of that conversion team that transitioned our in-house to CDS Global. And at the time, we thought it was the right decision to migrate our e-commerce site. During our initial migration, we were focused on the conversion of all our customer data and all the complexity that goes along with that. And therefore, our e-commerce replatform was secondary. You know, we were happy it was a lateral move, but and, you know, we did get the robust customer care that we didn't have previously, as it was directly tied to the fulfillment system. And again, because the focus of the main conversion and other priorities, we did not incorporate really any of the best practices that Ernie reviewed in respect to the migration of the store. And we didn't maximize the functionality of the platform that was available at the time. So we ended up with a functional store, and we boxed ourselves in. As many of the changes we realized we wanted post-conversion would require lots of programming hours, and that would be difficult to justify to our management. And as you can imagine, it was a pretty frustrating position to be in. A few years later, when our e-commerce provider upgraded their web store to an enhanced platform that offered more robust capabilities, we recognize the opportunity to do exactly what we do the first time around, which is really to follow Ernie's best practices. The second time around, we established our long-term needs in regard to an e-commerce store and reviewed all of those with our fulfillment provider. Some of the things we were interested in getting with the new platform, and Ernie mentioned his modules, were, you know, search engine optimization, improved website analytics, ability to have direct control over the content, which we didn't have before, ability to augment our website through ongoing product enhancements for little cost, which is very important, and better tracking of our customer purchase path from the browsing history on the site to purchases made or even abandoned in the cart. So, excuse me, let me catch up with these slides. Okay, so as Ernie laid out at the beginning of the webinar, if done correctly, the need or desire to replatform should really be the starting point for a whole host of decisions about long-term strategy as well as short-term goals. As he mentioned, one of those decision points is whether or not to outsource these functions. In our case, the decision to outsource our business functions has already been made. So I guess in some ways we had one fewer decision to make than a lot of folks who may still be grappling with the in-house versus outsource question. You know, but it also gave me additional insight into things you should look for if you are considering replatforming and outsourcing for the first time, as well as best practices for working with your current outsource vendor while replatforming. You know, so in addition to Ernie's five best practices, you know, I think I can add four of my own from the key lessons learned. One, look for a vendor who solicits feedback, is willing to have an open dialogue about direction and customer your needs. We have an account management team who understands our business. We've been with them for 3.5 years, understands our challenges, and understands my particular role and what Guidepost is trying to accomplish. And they knew what our web marketing team wanted in regard to enhancements, and they themselves moved to a new platform to better address the needs of their customer base in general. So really, our decision to replatform was ultimately their decision to replatform, since they were offering this new platform. One of the things that you can lose, though, with an outside provider is the autonomy to make whole-scale changes and enhancements. So it's imperative that we partner with a company who is current and takes advantage of the latest technology and really listens to the needs of the collective customer base. The previous platform we had was missing some key capabilities that we wanted in our store, but I feel like our vendor actively listened to our input and others, I'm sure, and they were quick to get us on a path to migration, knowing we've been looking for additional capabilities for a while. Our web marketing team wanted specific functionality, most of which was out of the box with the new web platform, you know, from on-the-fly changes we can make with the admin tool to the robust reporting that the tool supplies. And also, as I stated, we have the majority of control, and we don't really require any customization, which we had in the past, and that translated into dollars. Look for a vendor who can help you define your goals. You know, the second thing to look for in an outsource provider is someone who can help you define your goals, to Ernie's point earlier. What is it you're trying to accomplish with your particular replatform? What do you have to do to get there? You know, what could you point out as to indicators of success? In our case, we wanted to be able to make changes to the store without incurring program dollars. We wanted the ability to have downloadable content as well as key functionality that you really can expect from a contemporary store, things that will help you long-term as you grow your e-commerce business. And if you're working with an outsourced provider or considering one, they should be able to help you find those answers. At the time, we were willing to begin the conversation to invest in the then-current store. And so we had met with our outsourced partner, and they helped us translate our requirements for an enhanced e-commerce platform. They also worked with us on our timeline and advised us if we had to adjust our time schedule, they'd be able to meet our requirements as they were replatforming and, in essence, ended up saving us money we were considering investing. They ended up using Magento that Ernie explained before as an open-source web application, and really it fit almost every need we outlined as part of the e-commerce requirements. Excuse me. And thirdly, look for a vendor who works closely with your internal teams. I couldn't agree with Ernie more here. Ernie talked a lot about change team, and we refer to that as the conversion team. This is very important, especially if you're working with an outsourced provider who's not even at your location. So I'm adding this as a best practice. It was critical we stayed in sync with the project timelines and requirements so we can maintain the functionality of our site as we migrated. Keeping the marketing team in the loop is important as well, among all the other areas, but marketing was very important for our company. We had a web marketing manager as part of our conversion team, and having her on board eased any concerns that the desired outcome would not go off course. I mean, operations were controlling, and I think marketing was having a little bit of a problem with that, so having her on the team really helped. Eliminate scope creep. This is probably the most important if you want to deliver your web store on time. Stick to your agreed-upon requirements. Do not allow add-ons or nice-to-haves. You know, I found that keeping a list of enhancements we would prioritize after going live and assigning dates kept marketing happy, as we weren't dealing with specific requests as part of the conversion. They knew they wouldn't get lost or forgotten about, and actually we're working on those right now. And having a timeline with key milestones and ownership. It's very important that you assign ownership and key dates and meet weekly to keep everyone on task. The team needs to be communicative and sincere in discussing each milestone. We started our migration project around April 1st this year with the go-live date of August 1st. We ended up going live August 2nd. And to Attorney's point also, it was right prior to our busiest time of the year, so we had timed it perfectly working with marketing so we wouldn't have a revenue impact. And lastly, look for a vendor who can train and enable your team. Ernie talked about testing, which is critical. If you work with an outsourced provider, they should help you do internal QA and development, which will lessen the burden on your team. In our case, the heavy lifting was done by the vendor. When we received access to the admin tool, we really only found minor issues that were corrected prior to going live. Another critical aspect to take advantage of your new site is training and the enablement of your team. Your vendor should have a key role in making sure your site is tested and operational, and your team is ready and able to work on the new platform as the project wraps up. Our vendor actually flew out to our headquarters and trained our marketing operations team and key users of the system, so there was no lag time in productivity, and we were poised and ready to take advantage of the new site as it came live. And I can't stress enough, freeze production surrounding the launch With all the testing, you should be in good shape, but leaving yourself some time around the go-live date to button up any issues is a good idea. We work with marketing to adjust any e-promotions that link to the store, you know, giving us the needed time to ensure everything was in working order. So let me recap. So in summary, in addition to Ernie's five best practices, I could add four of my own. If you're working with or considering an outsourced provider, look for a vendor who listens to customer feedback and continually looks for innovative solutions. Look for a vendor who can help define your business requirements based on their experience and best practices. Keep your internal teams in sync with your vendor by having a main point of contact, which in our case happened to be operations, but keep marketing in the loop as well as other departments. And training and enablement is a critical piece that needs to be addressed and completed before the project can be considered done and should be done prior to going live. So I hope my experience helps anyone out there in the midst of a replatform, and I appreciate them giving me the time to speak. Let me hand this back to Joe.
Great. Thanks for that information, Joe. It was great. We have some time for some question and answer. I just want to remind everyone in the audience that you can use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists, and we have some already lined up, but certainly can take some more. So first one I have here from an audience member is, what e-commerce solutions seem to work best on WordPress websites? And Joe or Ernie, one of you guys want to take that one?
Ernie, I'll let you handle this one.
Well, I know of a number of them that do work reasonably well, but I think that I would hesitate to make any specific comments or recommendations, and I can hear a lot of people saying, oh, no, that's not fair, but for the following reason, and I think this applies to a number of other questions as well. I have seen a very, very wide spectrum of solutions work for companies of all sizes and shapes and configurations. What usually contributes to success or failure in the choice of any tool is the experience, the knowledge, the creativity, and the resources of the people who will be managing those tools. There are some solutions and platforms and utilities and programming languages and database languages that to me seem bizarre choices that I would never have recommended or even thought to have recommended, that are working extremely well in a variety of situations where I run across them. And it always boils down to the fact that somebody was very, very adept at applying that tool, understanding that tool, knew it inside out, and was able to cost-effectively manage it. The downside of what I might call a kind of boutique or out-of-the-mainstream approach to system selection or program selection or tool selection is that it very significantly reduces the availability of a labor pool to support that when the person, the guru, the whoever it was who championed this solution brought it into the company in the first place, so that as long as that one key person or a small team who are familiar with that application are there, they are able to manage it well and usually very cost effectively. As they begin to drop away or the one person leaves the company who is in charge of this tool or system or platform, suddenly you find yourself high and dry, and it's very, very difficult and usually expensive to find somebody who's going to be able to come in and take over. This is often what drives replatforming in the first place. So a more mainstream approach to tools is the way to go if you're a fairly large organization and you want to have interchangeable parts on the labor side, and certainly cost is frequently lower, although not always, on large mainstream applications. The opposite can actually apply sometimes. Some very widely adopted tools are extremely expensive, very difficult to maintain, do require a specialized team, an experienced team, And even though there may be thousands of people who understand a particular platform or tens of thousands, that doesn't mean they understand your business, your vertical, and so on and so forth. Be very, very careful, by the way, and I think this probably answers the initial question better than anything else, of experience in your niche, your vertical, with your type of customers and your type of business. The examples are legion, where a very popular tool is mostly applied. Let's take, for example, in the financial world, banks and insurance companies and so forth use this tool very widely, and 95% of the 150,000 people who are familiar with this tool come out of the financial world. Well, if you're not in the financial world, if you're selling some merchandise, a very specialized merchandise, to a very specialized audience or market, or you need to focus on, let's say, international sales or something that may not be in the mainstream, you're going to find that your labor pool is significantly reduced, and you may find actually almost nobody with the kind of experience you need to manage your system in your environment. That can turn a mainstream tool, and a rather expensive one, into an orphan very quickly when you find out that most of the people who can manage it don't understand your business. I would have to say that it's much easier to take somebody who understands your business, who's in the systems world or the data management world, and have them acquire the skills to manage a new tool effectively, especially if they are on an ongoing learning curve with that, than it is to take somebody who knows that tool inside and out, who's had 20 years of experience or 15 years of experience in a field totally unrelated to yours, and expect them to learn your business. They will do more harm probably in the first 12 months if by omission rather than commission that than would apply if the opposite were the case. So that's a somewhat long-winded answer, but I think that's my general response to any question regarding a specific tool. Make it work if you want the tool, but start with the people who will be managing it and move from there.
Great. Here we have another question that's come in. I think this one here, how far into the future should you try to plan when gathering your requirements for replatforming? Joe, do you have maybe any thoughts on that?
Sure, and Ernie, you can follow up if you'd like.
Sure.
I find that it depends. I mean, we were with CDS Global for 3.5 years, so they knew our business pretty well. So, you know, a web marketing team had spent time, actually looking at Magento, and pretty much the requirements that Magento provided were the baseline for our project. So gathering the requirements didn't take very long, but the planning and the execution, attorney's point, we did it in 5 months, but you need to plan, I would say, anywhere from 6 months to a year. Ernie, you agree?
Yes, Joe. I think that 6 months to a year is a very comfortable planning window. It gives you enough time to do it right, but it doesn't give you enough time to get yourselves in trouble. One of the things that, and by trouble I mean that while, Joe, you mentioned very, very appropriately earlier to avoid scope creep, if your project goes beyond 12 months, it's almost impossible to avoid some kind of scope creep because the business rules will change, the environment changes, the market changes, the technology changes. The longer you wait to convert once your project is underway, the more at risk the project becomes for external reasons rather than internal reasons. So 6 to 12 months is probably enough time to do it right. 18 months, as I said before, is the absolute outside that I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, and to your point, making sure you time that with your business too, so it could vary.
Correct.
Another question we have here is as far as which CMS code do you prefer from an SEO standpoint? Ernie, that might be one that best for you.
Yes, but I think I would probably go back to my original answer. We're talking about content management solutions. And again, I don't have any preferences. I follow as many of the vendors as, I'm not sure as humanly possible, but as many of them as I can. And as I said, I've seen really great outcomes from rather obscure solutions, and I've seen some ho-hum, disappointing, very problematic results from some mainstream solutions. And again, it comes down to who's using the tool. So work with your own people. If you've got a clean slate and you're saying, well, we're going to hire new people, we're going to change platforms, we need new tools, do start with the people who have the experience that you're looking for, who understand your business to a reasonable degree. Obviously, they'll know a lot more about it when they get there. And you may even want to hire people with some fairly broad experience and wait until they've been there for 3 months before you settle on a tool. It'll take them that long to figure out exactly what's needed. And I also want to make one other comment here. It relates a little bit to some of the things that Joe was talking about. The more mainstream the tool, it's going to be what it is. It is what it is. The more boutique the tool, you will find the vendor, the supplier, the developer more willing to work with you to make modifications to the tool, to extend the functionality of the tool. And then you get onto another spectrum of, you know, how much flexibility do you want? How much is this going to cost? What does this do to reliability? It certainly is going to have a huge impact on reliability, but it may be something you desperately want. So, you know, again, it's really what you're looking for rather than just making some kind of generic response to what's popular out there and what do I see the most of. Because what I see the most of is pretty average, and I'm looking for really best of class, and that really depends on the people who are managing it.
Okay. The next question I have in here is specific to Joe's experience with Guideposts. Joe, the question is, what was your biggest worry about the site migration, and how did you overcome it?
My biggest worry, marketing. No, just kidding. The challenge was ultimately, we had this new web store, and there were a lot of promises made about functionality, and we had been in a situation where we didn't have a lot of functionality. And I think, the end product, I mean, all these promises that were made, I was worried that the end product would not provide us what marketing expected, and it turns out it did. I mean, I don't know if Ernie can elaborate on Magento, but from what I can tell, Magento is a great tool. You're able to use what other customers design. You can pull that into your own store. Ernie, I don't know if you want to talk about modules, but I think that's an important thing to understand.
Yes. It is one of the better open source solutions. It's certainly not the only one, but it's probably the one of the most widely adopted. And because of that, it does have a lot of tools and part of Ecoverse modules, as I refer to them, that do integrate well into it. Some of those are specifically designed to do that. Others are designed to integrate with a wide variety of platforms. But it is a flexible, solid tool, but again, not the only one out there. It's a good start, but it's what you do with it afterwards that really makes all the difference.
The next question I have, one of our audience members had struggled, they said, with on and off with of replatforming, and wanted to know, do you think it's easier with going with an outsourced provider than rather than doing it in-house? Joe, maybe you have some thoughts from your experience with this on that question.
Actually, I do. I think because we were, for us, like I was saying, the decision was made. We were already linked. We were already doing the majority of our direct mail business with a third party. So it made sense for us. I mean, the cost of having an in-house staff to to support a platform. It just didn't make sense. You're also talking about, you know, our third-party provider can provide us, you know, credit card processing. They can do the credit checks for us. They can do the tax tables. I mean, this is all software that you have to pay for. And if you have the third party do it, you're not incurring the cost yourself. So for us, it was the right solution, but it doesn't necessarily mean you really have to look at your own company and decide what makes sense.
Okay. The next question I have here, how important is it when looking at a replatform, is it designed to work with mobile and tablet users?
I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I'll be happy to address that. I think it's critical. I have been astonished, although I've ceased to be astonished, but about a year ago I was astonished at how quickly the m-commerce or mobile world has taken off. It is the wave of the future, and the future is fast upon us. The tablet world, ditto, although I think that people carry their smartphones around with them a lot more than they carry their tablets around. Most people do. Some people are glued to their tablets, but it's finding a really important place in the entire e-commerce world. In fact, lots of studies and my own sense of this indicate that within 3 years or so, the majority of interactions with e-commerce solutions will be, or with direct commerce solutions online, will be via the mobile phone. And it really requires a specialized interface. It can be an app, a standalone app that interfaces to the or provides the data to the customer who wants to go to the merchant's website, or it can be a true mobile commerce site, a web interface that's configured to display effectively and efficiently on the mobile phone, where, of course, you have much smaller real estate. All of this seems so obvious, and yet there are too many companies still out there who haven't climbed this mountain yet. So you go to their website on your smartphone, and it's microscopic in font size, and the navigation is impossible. I think we're going to see this go away in the next 2 or 3 years, and just at the point where the majority of interaction will be through the smartphone or through a mobile device. I also think that we can't get too complacent. There will probably be some type of migration to a tool we haven't even yet become familiar with that's still in some company's development lab that's neither a smartphone nor a tablet, probably voice interactive, certainly touch capable, but I'm sure that within 5 years we'll begin to see whatever this next generation is, and it will be ultra portable. It may even involve some type of roll-up screen that you can pull out of your sack or your briefcase and put down flat on a tray table in front of you on a moving vehicle or train or plane or what have you, and interact that way on their third generation 5G Wi-Fi or what have you. So I think that these types of mobile interfaces are not only critical today, but will become imperative tomorrow.
Okay. Next question I have is sort of a follow-up to a previous question, this one targeted to you, Joe. Since your migration at Guideposts, what have the results been in terms of site performance?
You know, to tell you the truth, it's only been 2 months, so I'm not aware. I haven't been updated with any new numbers. I mean, I only can imagine it's going to help us. From the site we were at, we did not have functionality, and by that I mean gift giving, which is a huge part of our business, is so much more fluid in this new environment that I can't help but think we'll benefit from that alone. There's also, you know, the account functionality where a customer can sign in and really manage their account. We didn't have any of this before. So I think it changes the relationship we're going to have with our customers, and I think moving forward that's very important.
Okay. Here's another one here from an audience member, and Joe, this one might be for you, or Ernie, you want to jump in as well. As far as, have you had any problems with using third-party platforms in PCI compliance?
No, none at all.
And my response to that would be, if that question is meant to be a third-party service provider in one fashion or another, they are generally the most compliant because it's part of their lifeblood. They can't afford not to be. That doesn't mean that you can be complacent. PCI compliance is a very narrowly defined spec. It's detailed. But it's detailed within, sometimes painfully detailed, within a very narrow range of financial data, credit card-related data, and it's evolving for mobile commerce as well. It is a moving target. It'll be another probably year or two before the mobile spec is fully complete. And by then it'll be time to revisit it. But one needs to be aware that there is other data, email addresses, for example, that are very important to safeguard, which PCI does not begin to address. So I think data security is a very critical issue. We are all reading about, and will this week and next probably read even more about the hacking issues, and I'm referring to what's going on out there in lower Manhattan and elsewhere, where hackers are certainly beginning to make noises about attacking one major site or another. We read about these things all the time. All kinds of not only payment processors who've been PCI compliant have been hacked, but major merchants and not so major merchants have been hacked. But one final comment. The biggest security hole, as we all know, is from our own employees. The inside jobs done either by people who have a very low sense of responsibility or by employees who have been let go for one reason or another can be the most troublesome of all. So data security is a huge issue, but going for what seems to be off-the-shelf, the most secure tool, doesn't solve all the problems. We also read all the time about platforms, tools, programs, so forth that have been out there for a long, long time that everybody thought were ultra secure suddenly are hacked as well. So it's a moving target internally and moving target externally, a huge responsibility and one that cannot be taken lightly.
Great. This next question in is sometimes people can see working with an outsourced vendor as a bit of an obstacle. Joe, what are your thoughts based on your experience on that?
Yeah, I don't think in our case, it's really not an obstacle at all. I think it's important that you do your homework when you're looking for a third party. I mean, we happen to be with CDS, and we've been with them for 3.5 years, so we have, that relationship has, been firmed up. But if you do your homework, I would suggest highly when you're talking to a third party to get, companies that work with them and really get recommendations, that's what we did when we were looking for our third parties, and it really was very helpful. I mean, network, get out there, and make sure you get with other companies and discuss what that third party can do.
Yeah, and I have a similar but somewhat different perspective. I actually spend most of my professional time working with vendors who try not to be obstacles. I always figure that companies are going to roll their own and do everything in-house. They've got their ducks in a row, but with all the caveats I've talked about. And companies that are going to go to off-the-shelf tools that they don't want to make many changes to will find the best off-the-shelf tool for them by process of elimination. So that's why I sort of act as the tugboat to guide people through the difficult shoals of finding a third-party vendor they want to work with who is very flexible. But there's a downside to that, and I'll be the first to admit it. If you find a vendor that you feel is not an obstacle, one who's willing to really work with you to make changes, you're going to spend half your time celebrating their flexibility and their collegiality and their willingness to work with you. And the other half of the time, you're going to be yelling and cursing and screaming and tearing your hair out because the changes they make don't come through as bulletproof as you'd like the first time. There are holes in them because anything is customized. It's going to need to go through a couple of iterations before it's right, which is another reason for test, test, test. But this flexibility is a double-edged sword for sure. And while you certainly seek it, may need it and want it, you just have to be very, very careful that this is thoroughly domesticated beast that you've got on your leash, and just be careful that it doesn't turn around and bite you.
Yeah, my perspective here is that your third party makes money when you make money, and so they have a vested interest in making sure that the product they deliver to you, supports and your leverage point. So I find that third parties, when it comes to making money, want to make money with you, and that they would try to become a strategic partner with us. And I found that to be the case, with any third party we've looked into.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly if you're outsourcing basically everything, as you've done,
sure.
And that certainly applies. Again, too much flexibility is too much flexibility, but you're right. They're only going to make money when you do. So, and they're the most likely to have the kind of team to come back to you and say, you know, we hear you, but here's our response to that, and deal with it as a negotiation rather than just how high do we jump. But, yeah, no, you're absolutely right. If you're outsourcing everything, that would be the case.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten a lot of great questions in. I guess we just have about time for one more. So the audience member wants to know your opinion on open source software for building an e-commerce web store. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, again, I would say it's extremely flexible in the right hands. It does give you what open source does. Just so that everybody's clear, and I realize some of the people who are on listening to the webinar may not fully, completely, and confidently understand what open source is. It gives you the source code, open access to the source code, either for free or almost free, as part of the package. So you can go in and make changes at the code level to what the system does. It's not just configuring the interfaces and kind of setups with a yes, no, or multiple choice on configuring a package solution. This lets you get right into the code, change how the code works, modify that, customize it to fit your business needs. If you have the team that can work effectively with the tool, you're going to get the very best highly configured, optimized solution working with an open source application. I mean, same could be said of a system where you can buy the source code for whatever you're paying for it. But the thing about open source is there's a huge ecoverse of its own of programmers who keep adding to it. It is a little bit like the Firefox web browser where you've got a whole... You've got tens of thousands of users contributing code to that, not just willy-nilly. It obviously has to be applied by a management team. But open source does, in a sense, provide the best of all possible worlds if managed carefully.
Great. Well, we're just about out of time then for today. On behalf of Retail Online Integration and CDS Global, I'd like to thank you for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. I hope to see you at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Thanks, everyone.